This is Fed Up, the podcast by Falcon Nutrition, and I'm your host, Jason Falcon. This podcast will feature coaches, current and former clients, industry colleagues and peers, as well as a handful of others that we feel will bring value to your life as you continue on your nutrition journey. Enjoy, thank you for listening, and let's have some fun. All right, welcome back to another episode of Fed Up, the Falcon Nutrition podcast. I am super excited today. Esther Avant is here with me. This should be a very, very neat dynamic because Esther and I are in a lot of the same circles. I think we share a lot of the same principles within our coaching, a lot of the same views on similar things. Probably have some differences too that maybe we will uncover as we go. But anyone listening is going to hear us getting to know each other better live as we speak more. She's someone that I've wanted to connect with for a long time, so I'm very excited to have her on here today. Hi, Esther.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. And I'm just as excited. It's been fun sort of getting to know each other a little bit in Facebook groups. And like you said, just kind of being in some of the same circles, but it's nice to get some face-to-face time and why not record it and let everybody hear?
Yeah, here we go. Something I do a really terrible job at is I have, you know, people on here that I respect and are important to me in some sense. And I assume everyone knows who they are, and I just launch right into it and away we go. Who are you? You give us, I'm in Virginia Beach. You're not even in the same country. Tell us a little bit about you, where you are, what you do, who you help, those sorts of things.
Yeah. So I have a hard time introducing myself too, because I feel like there's so many different, you know, qualifications and titles and things like that. So I'm a personal trainer, nutrition coach, sports nutritionist, weight loss coach, health coach, kind of all the things. I've been doing this for 17 years and, you know, I'm constantly learning and growing and doing internships and certifications and things like that. So, you know, the titles have grown. I really kind of consider myself a health and wellness coach because I feel like that encompasses sort of all the things. So I've worked in all sorts of different dynamics. I started off as a personal trainer when I was in college, became a fitness manager at a Boston sports club, moved across the country, worked in corporate wellness in California, worked at a boutique group fitness studio. When I was in Virginia Beach, I worked for one of the city rec centers. And then when I moved to Virginia Beach for my husband, who's in the Navy, and it was around then that I started my online business, or what grew to be my online business. And that was really just in an effort to not have to find a new gym to work at every time we moved.
Yeah. Job can follow and you.
Exactly. And it was like very early in the internet coaching
around,
days.
Yeah. Like around what year was that?
Oh gosh. Okay. So we met 2011. I moved 2012. So like, yeah, 2012-ish. And it was when some of like the OGs in the online coaching space were just making it look, and at the time, I think it probably was pretty easy.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, I'm qualified, I'm experienced, I'm smart. Surely I can figure this out. And, you know, fast forward like 5 years of just like shouting into the abyss, I finally started to get some traction. You know, my dad has been my biggest supporter for forever. And there was a long time that it was like, I'd put out a blog, it would get one reader. I would make a post, it would get one, you know, heart or smiley face or whatever. But anyway, so that's sort of my career in a nutshell. Right now I'm in Germany. We're actually, 2 weeks from the day we're recording this, we will be back in the States. We've been in Germany for almost 3 years. And you are getting me right before my life turns into chaos and we ship everything off and see it again sometime next year. So,
jeez.
So here we are. I have a son, he's 4 and a half. He's cool. He's really helped me shift my perspective and I think be more relatable to clients too on how to be a fit and healthy person who is also a mom and a business owner and, you know, not being a 20 something personal trainer who can just spend all my waking time exercising and meal prepping. It's really helped kind of shift my priorities in a really good way.
Absolutely. And so your company has evolved. You do all nutrition? Is it nutrition and fitness? You have a team? Are you solo?
I have a team now, which blows my mind. I was a one-woman show for so long. And now I have such an amazing team that I can hardly fathom how I was doing all the things before.
Yeah.
And, you know, definitely went through and probably am still going through the phase of needing to delegate, but everything just feels like your babies and, you know, only I can do it and I can do it the best way and all that stuff. But I have an amazing team now of coaches and support staff. What we do, I refer to it as like all-encompassing health and lifestyle coaching, because yes, we do exercise. Yes, we do nutrition, but there's really so much more to it than that. Mm-hmm. And I think that's part of what differentiates us, is we really kind of specialize in going deeper, mm-hmm. and seeing that the exercise and nutrition stuff, we really try to simplify it. We call it the big rocks. That there's like a handful of behaviors that are going to give you the most bang for your buck. And if you focus on those, not only are you going to get better results because you're not spreading yourself so thin, but it's also going to be easier to identify the things that prevent you from being consistent with them.
Yep.
That's really where the real work is. So if you know, okay, I am going to walk 6,000 steps a day, I'm going to strength train 3 days a week, that's where I'm setting, you know, my bar. And you start noticing, well, I've only been doing 2 strength workouts and some days I don't get my steps in. Why not? And that's what you need to start solving for, is it's rarely that you're lazy or undisciplined, which is where we tend to go with it. It's more so you aren't in the habit of setting boundaries or managing your time super well. Maybe you, you know, any number of different things that are sort of beneath the surface. That's the real work that it takes to make lasting change. So that's sort of where the bulk of our coaching sort of ends up being.
Yeah, I love it. My company is called Falcon Nutrition. I hate that my name is in the company. And honestly, at this point, I dislike that nutrition is in the company name, because we are a nutrition coaching company. I tell people, and people probably have no idea what the heck I'm talking about, but pretty much for every reason you just said, it's so much more than nutrition. Nutrition is like one component. It could be like Falcon, anything. It could be called Falcon steps, Falcon walking, Falcon sleep, Falcon stress, Falcon water, Falcon. There's like so many things that go into it. And then while all those actual widgets are being talked about, it's the relationship. It's what's going on with your life. What's going on? You know, the actual widgets are like the final 2%. What is the 98% of everything in your life that is allowing or disallowing the 2% to happen?
Exactly.
So I like how you describe how you coach. I was telling Jeb, I'm on the pre-sale list. It goes live in 2 weeks for the Precision Level 2. Now they call it like the Master Health Coach, board certified. So I think a lot of us that were doing, you know, training or nutrition have kind of realized, even those two, like, what about everything that leads up to those things? And it's like, what about the actual life part? I still don't know what a life coach is. I am definitely not a life coach. I have not figured out my own life. I can't coach others on figuring out their lives. But I think something that you guys are probably very good at, knowing you and having seen your posts and the way you write and the way your brain works, I think you care, which the medium in which we coach can be difficult to convey how much we care. But I think if we do it right, it becomes clear to the person on the other side of the conversation that we do care. And so they hire us to help them with those widgets, right? Whatever it is, fitness, nutrition, like, until we can actually get to a meaningful place of working on that stuff, we've got to have this rapport established and this safe place and this connection. And so for those listening, I ask, what do you want to talk about? and she said, well, personal connection. I have a couple different things written down that we can go with it, but I think it sort of makes or breaks experience for a member, and then whether it's a coach or a company. But the ability to connect with people, I think, is absolutely everything. I'm talking way too much. You can just cut me off, or you know,
I do the same thing, especially in my own podcast. Like when I don't have a guest, I just talk and talk and talk, and sometimes like the back of my brain will be like, what are you doing? You're still talking. Do you even know what you're saying?
You become self-aware of your own voice. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm like, the words are still coming out. Okay. I have to go back to a couple of things. First of all, Falcon is such a good name. Had to have it in the
But name. It's like your voice. It's my name. Like, you know, like Avan is such a cool name. Well, like you see it every day. You write it every day. It's on all your mail. Like, but more than that, honestly, I care about like my team, because the exact same. Like, I am not doing all of the things. Like, I am I feel like a Roomba most days, like bouncing into things and like redirecting. But like they are the company, like it's them, right? So the fact that it's like my name on it almost feels like it trivializes how amazing they are, amongst many other reasons that I don't like my name. Anyway, keep going.
You know, I did something similar. My LLC is Esther Avent Wellness Coaching. And yep. It's funny, actually, I formed it before I was legally married. And I was working with a business coach at the time, and I was agonizing over business names. And she was like, just go with your name, get the website, just be done with it. This is dumb. And I had to like have a conversation with my husband. It was like, how do you feel? Like I'm jumping right into this thing.
Stage five clinger.
Yeah. And then exactly what you said, kind of as I stopped being just me, I started to feel weird. You know, my original logo was just my full name. And I was like, it's weird that my coaches are just wearing my name on their shirts. So we kind of rebranded. I have this new logo. It's just initials.
Yeah,
and we
got EA
Coaching. And at least it's like less in your face of like, hey, it's me.
Yeah.
I did the Precision Nutrition Level 2 course. I interned with them 2016-ish. So mm-hmm. I got to intern in one of the women's cohorts. And it was when they had first, it might have been like the first iteration of Level 2. I got to do that. It's good stuff. And exactly what you said. I think the reason that I got into psychology and mindset work and kind of all of the, you know, behavior change type stuff was because, like you, you know, I started off, my degree is in exercise science. I became a personal trainer in college. That was my first job. And I realized how much the nutrition piece was missing for so many of my clients. And I was like, okay, yep. Well, I'm not qualified to talk about that. Why don't I change that?
Yep.
So I interned, I got certified, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, at this time I was in my early 20s. I ended up moving to California and it was kind of getting a fresh start. And despite all that I knew, I was still personally struggling. I was in the very textbook, like binge and restrict cycle of being yep. perfect all week and then binging all weekend. And it was so frustrating that I was like, I have so much textbook knowledge yeah. that isn't computing. It's yeah. not working for me. And so my pursuit of finding what works and how to make change was really personal to start. And once I learned how to do it myself, mm-hmm. all right, well, this is the meat and potatoes of it. Yeah. And like you said, you know, that the exercise nutrition stuff is really kind of the 2% that if everything else is squared away, that stuff's yeah. easy. And yeah. if it's not feeling easy, then there's more work to do. And it's often the stuff that the places we don't want to go, or the stuff that might feel too woo-woo of like, well, what are your thoughts and what's your inner monologue? And
yeah,
all the stuff that the more you learn, you realize really does matter, but is more complex than just here's a meal plan or.
Well, and it's a funny thing. I hate to keep bringing up Jeb's episode because I'm not trying to sell anyone. I don't make any money. I don't think anyone listens to my podcast, but it's fun. Actually, people do listen. Please stay. Don't hop
off. Yeah, I gotta go, actually.
Something that I think happens a lot is we take these certifications, you know, we go through these courses, we do this next thing, and you always hear about scope of practice, refer out. Before I recorded with Jeb, I was listening to one of his older episodes that he recorded with Dr. Lisa Lewis, and they're discussing basically that scope of practice and how it's very easy to say like, okay, I'm going to put up this wall and this wall, and what you're talking about is outside those walls, and you're going to get me in trouble, so I'm not. And she talks about how that just creates this forever off-axis relationship. Like now they trusted you, they brought you this thing, you basically threw it back over the wall and said, bring that somewhere else because I'm staying in my scope because my certification. What she said is, what was the analogy she used? Stay in your lane is what people love to say. She goes, well, we have lanes, but you're in a lap pool and the water is fluid and the water is kind of drifting between the lanes. And Jeb's analogy is it's a 6-lane highway. It's not a 2-lane country road. You're probably not going to get in trouble, right? Like, you know, within reason, there's always an asterisk beside everything, but we can't be totally afraid to have these conversations when we know we can help. And I'm sure you would agree. I think one of the things that I really have tried to become better at, because I'm a human in the same role that other people are, you know, that I help. A lot of people just want someone to listen. you don't have to have all of the answers in the world, but the world is a heavy place a lot of times, especially the last few years, to simply just not carry things and to be able to say them out loud in a safe space into the universe. Just creating that and giving people a place for that, I think makes a huge, huge difference. I was going somewhere else with Jeb and Dr. Lewis, and I forget.
Well, you did a good job bringing it back to personal connection, because I couldn't agree more. And that's something that I mean, I don't know, I guess opinions can always change, but I feel pretty strongly right now that if the step that someone is ready and willing and able to take is to hire someone like us, great. If through the course of working together, they bring things to us that are, you know, better for a mental health professional or whomever, great. Because at least they are getting some sort of outlet and some sort of help. The fact that, you know, maybe to say something out loud for the first time to another person and have it be well received, then gives you the strength or the courage to say it to a therapist or whomever is, you know, better suited to handle it. But I just feel like it's doing people a disservice to say, well, I could certainly help with some aspects of your life, but I'm not the person. You need this other person. And I you know, I feel like we always have to like put all the disclaimers that, of course, there are certain things that are just wildly outside a scope of practice. But like you said, people are so complex and everything is so interconnected that it just doesn't feel right to me to tell somebody, no, I can't help you, when I know that I can. And like I said, if our relationship is positive and strong enough that they feel comfortable opening up to me, maybe that's just the outlet they need. Or maybe then, because I'm someone, or, you know, one of my coaches is someone that they trust, now hearing, have you considered working with, you know, X type of professional? Right. Maybe that won't fall on deaf ears this time. Or maybe somebody saying, would you like me to help you find some resources that are appropriate right now? We do that all the time. We want our clients to have a whole team of support. And
we're one tool in a toolbox that ideally is getting full, you know.
Exactly. We have toolboxes in our member dashboard for that exact reason. It's like that. Yeah, you're just building tools all over the place. So I've tried to build out, you know, we have a mindset coach, and we have a PhD in clinical psychology, and we've got a dietitian and an exercise physiologist, all the things. But we will very often encourage clients to find a therapist or, you know, seek out whatever sort of help. But, you know, that comes with its own challenges too, that a lot of people are looking for a therapist right now. And, you know, we've had clients who have called dozens of practitioners, can't find anybody who has availability or takes insurance or whatever. So I just feel like if the alternative is someone gets no help, that's not a good answer.
Yeah.
At the very least, to be surrounded by people who genuinely care about you and want to help you succeed and whatever that looks like. You know, sometimes we have clients who are going through grief, and their sessions with their coach are just having an outlet.
Yeah.
Just talking
about 100%. And I love that you brought it up and not me, because I feel like I just say the same things over and over a lot of times. But I literally was having that conversation 2 days ago on Wednesday. I could really go on an off ramp here, but our website used to have live signups. Here's our plans. Here's the cost. Here's the duration. Sign up. Now I do discovery calls, consult calls. There's so many tacky names. It's a conversation. I want to learn about you. I want you to learn about us. We pick each other's brains. Here's what we offer. Does everything make sense? Would you like to, you know, it's a no pressure thing. Those calls, it became abundantly clear to me about 3 months in that over the course of 45 minutes, many of them within the last 20 minutes ended up with people saying things out loud that they had never said things out loud before, and getting emotional in a way that took us both by surprise, which inevitably led Jason to getting emotional. But it really kind of drove home the point of, like, we carry a lot of stuff and we usually don't say it out loud. So the point at which, like what you just described, like imagine going on a hike with your best friend. You and a girlfriend, you're hiking on this trail, and you're both just talking about life. And she says something that maybe you're not the subject matter expert, but imagine if you just said, I can't talk about that with you. Like, what the hell does that do for a friendship, right? And why would that be any difference with us? So when you start thinking about it in that context, it's like, why would we treat it like that? Again, just listen, you know, listen. If you know someone that is the best suited to help them, and the trust, like you said, the rapport and the trust is there to where you can then maybe make that segue, cool. If nothing else, listen. Or if you don't know, I don't know is such an underrated response. You don't have to know everything. I don't know everything. I take great pride in telling people I don't know. Maybe I can find an answer for you, but for now, I'm not going to guess.
That was a huge realization for me too. So it took so much pressure off to realize that I wasn't expected to have the answers all the time. Mm-hmm. That's a great comparison though. You're absolutely right. You wouldn't shoot down a person that you care about when they're talking about something, even if you're outside, you know, your comfort or your scope of practice. You just be like, well, okay, I can, at the very least I can be a listening ear. You said something else. Oh, about doing the consult calls. That's something that I recently stopped doing.
Mm-hmm. It was exact. I'm so conflicted. I would love to hear you. Like, I realize we're going back and forth and like almost like, I told everyone we're going to be learning about each other. I'm very conflicted, honestly, because it's a time of demand, and there's other things. I think that my time is absolutely hugely, that's the best place possible it could be spent. But I am a father of two. I am a husband. I'm a guy that likes to do things. I still actively coach. Like, I have a lot of things, and it is a very big. But I think some people find it off-putting, honestly. Like, I think. I want to know what your options are. I don't want to hop on the phone with you. I don't want another call on my schedule. So I don't know. I don't know what the right answer is, honestly.
I mean, I don't think there is one. I think that's, I guess, the double-edged sword of owning a business, but more so, I think it's what's so cool about owning a business is you just get to decide. Is this how I want to do it or not? And I know for me, when I stopped doing them, the demographic that we work with seemed to really like them, which makes sense because I talk a lot in my marketing and my content about connection and the depth of coaching. So of course, somebody wants to have, you know, a touch point first and make sure, like, does this feel right? Do I get a good vibe? Can I ask my questions? So the more I thought about it, the more I realized, like, it's something that's important to me too, because I've never done this to try to serve as many people as possible, regardless of if they're a good fit or if I really think I can help. I really do want to make a difference. I want to help the women that we work with change their lives. And if that means I work with fewer women, but we get deeper transformation, so be it. And I think for me, it's really helpful. Like you said, it really does go both ways. That of course, I want our clients to feel comfortable with me and with our coaches and our community. I also want to know that they're a good fit, and that their expectations match what they're going to actually receive, because there are a lot of companies out there that are more transactional or more focused on numbers or just kind of prescribing and things like that. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's just not us. So for me, doing the calls, I think, is something, although it's appealing to think like, oh, I could just free up those hours in my schedule, it started to take me away from one of my main values in the business, which is the connection. And it sounds like you feel similarly. So what has helped me with the time demand is that when I started to get overwhelmed, and as I was living overseas where I had a 6-hour time difference from the East Coast, it was just unreasonable to expect myself to be working, you know, full US hours.
It was probably like pitch black outside, so your lighting was all weird. There's so much that goes into that, right? Like, even because if you were working some odd hours, it was probably.
Yes, I was doing client calls at like 2 a.m. It was weird. But so I asked my head coach, Meg, to start doing consults. She didn't know what she was doing. She was super nervous. She felt like the weight of the business was now on her shoulders, that I was going to be upset if she, lost a sale or something like that. But it's been amazing. It's a great opportunity for her to sort of become more of a face of the business, because that was a concern too. It's like,
she's awesome. Whenever I see her post. So I'm curious, and I totally realize again that I keep cutting you off.
That's fine. I just go and go and go until you do.
That's why I love this. It's my podcast. All you got to do is buy a pair. You know, it's not difficult to start a podcast.
It sure isn't.
half the point, right? I want to make sure it's a good fit. I want to make sure the issue we were running into before is people would sign up for a thing, and then the coach's job, instead of coaching, became convincing them to do the thing that they had already signed up for. So it's like people had no idea what they were signing up for. This nips that in the bud. I was on a consult call, which is why I was a few minutes late. I'm sorry. You get a feel for someone's personality. You know your coaches very well, so you get to be brainstorming who's going to be the best fit for their personality, for their goals. Like, that's invaluable things that you can't do on an intake form. Yep. On the opposite side of the coin, you're you, I'm me, this coach is this coach. So I feel like, and that's not to say like you or I are better or less than anyone else, but it's almost like they start their journey on that call. And then you go, okay, cool, welcome. This is your coach over here. It's this new person. And sometimes I fear, not that I am, you know, we're just different. We do things differently than other people. And each coach within my team does things differently than the next coach. So I almost wonder if that doesn't play in. Like, do I have coaches doing the calls? Okay, now that's a time demand on that. Like, I don't know. I guess I'm not asking you anything, but these are like all the places my brain goes.
Yeah, no, totally same. That was one of the biggest concerns I had was, you know, when you were the one doing all the coaching, everything from start to finish is very streamlined. You're talking about working with me. So you're getting to know me through my content. It's much easier to bridge the gap. And now you're talking to me, you're opening up to me, and then it can feel like giving you kind of the pawn off of like, okay, this has been great. Nice to know you. Here you go. And that was definitely more a fear, I think, in my head than ever actually came to fruition.
Yeah.
There were a couple instances. I did have a couple of women that I talked to who wanted so strongly to work with me directly that when I said that that wasn't an option, which I needed to set that boundary for my sanity living here.
Did you compromise on that a lot when you were trying to make the...
I didn't. That's something that I really worked hard on, is to not go back on my boundaries. It would have been so easy. I had a couple of people who were essentially begging. Mm-hmm. And of course I want to help. But I also knew I set this boundary for a reason. And this is a very slippery slope. And also, how resentful am I going to be of these calls?
Good for you. Good for you for that self-awareness. It is a very real.
So I think that's part of it. It's just like recognizing, you might lose a little bit of business because you won't be their coach. But what helped me is working on throughout the call and throughout, you know, my marketing, even prior to the call, stressing that we're a team, that we all work together. You're going to have a point person who is, you know, whomever is the best fit for you. You're going to have interactions with me on the group calls that I do in the Facebook group. We all work together kind of behind the scenes. Yep. That helps me feel better about it not being directly me. And now it's just not even on my radar anymore. So I think it's kind of one of those things that the more you think it's going to be an issue, the bigger issue it'll be. And the more you just decide this is what's best for the clients, the more that will be true too.
Yep. Some sage wisdom in there. Thank you. This is like, you've got a head start. I'm kind of like a few laps behind you in the race right now, just with like the progressions and where my brain is with things and trying to decide what the right dynamic is. As of now, it is a net positive to be doing these calls because everyone knows exactly what they're signing up for. We have two different styles of coaching. I can clearly explain both. I can, you know, have a very honest conversation. We have a very, very hands-on plan where they're checking in on video every week. And then we have an app-based plan. I can make an honest recommendation. Some people, it's actually to the lesser plan. Like, no, really, I don't think you need that one. It might almost feel like too much. You know, I don't know.
Very similar setup. We have kind of our premium that's more hands-on. We have our standard that's less so. And, you know, same thing. I'm not here to like try to squeeze as many dollars out of you as I can. I want you to get what you need. And if that's the less hand-holding, that's fine. I think, you know, it's important to both of us that our businesses aren't transactional.
Right.
And I feel like having the option to just buy straight from the site is a transactional thing. That is somebody who's like, okay, insert dollars here, get you know, outcome there. So it's almost like that is sort of misaligned, where the people who that was attracting probably were the ones that are like, oh, I don't want to do like all this other stuff. Just tell me the macros, just give me the workouts.
Yeah, 1,000%.
So now that, you know, it is, you're kind of like weeding people out. Well, if somebody's not willing to invest the time to talk to you on the front end, they're probably not going to be the best fit for the type of coaching that you guys do. So better to have, even if it's fewer, better aligned clients than dozens that you're just like, well, nobody's doing anything. And
I was talking to Jeb yesterday and I don't even remember what we were talking about, but it's like, we were talking about the seminar that we were just at in Dallas and how I have this thing in my head. If someone took the time to prepare to present for a room, I'm never going to be the guy that, this one's not relevant. I'm not going to be the guy walking out of the room, like out of respect for it's his stage. He's presenting. A lot of people were just coming and going, whatever was relevant to them, they were in the room for that one. And it's sort of, I guess it's a metaphor, but like the people that don't want to work with you are not your people. You were probably never actually going. And that doesn't mean like they do have the right people somewhere. It just wasn't you in that instance. And they are probably going to have an awesome breakthrough, but it wasn't you. So like when people get up and leave the room, when you're on the stage for this thing you worked hard for, that's okay. Those weren't your people. Like, don't worry about them walking out of the room, because now you have a room of people that you can make a difference for, and it's relevant for them.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, when you want to help people, and when you've been the entirety of the business for so long, it's hard not to take it personally when you're thinking that, but I know I can help and I know we can do this. But you're absolutely right that, you know, we all have types of clients that we gravitate towards, clients who gravitate towards us. And those are the people we want to be seeking out and filling our time with.
Right.
And that, you know, there's no shortage of options out there. There is literally something for everyone. And better for us to be transparent about what working with us is actually like than to almost be like duping people to get them in the doors and then be like, aha, here's what we're really gonna do.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I guess taking it a different way, how do you feel about, let's just look at the nutrition side of it. How many nutrition tracking apps are there? How many amazing nutrition coaching, like Macro Factor? To me, I tell anyone and everyone that will listen, that is off-ramping, they don't need any aspect of coaching. If you want to track anything and you want a place to account for it, Macro Factor is amazing. What do they call it? Adherence neutral. Like you don't see red things and you don't get penalized for this or that. It's just a very easy to use, psychologically almost uplifting food tracking app. Anyway, you hear like AI this and AI that and ChatGPT and we're all going to be out of a job. What are your thoughts on technology and what it means for our livelihoods?
You know, I feel like a handful of years ago, I would have been, you know, Chicken Little, the sky is falling about everything that and like the new, you know, weight loss drugs and all those things. Now I just feel so confident in the need for human connection.
Yeah.
Like it's not even on my radar. I'm not worried. And I think there probably are good chunks of the nutrition and the exercise industry that are, but it's largely because what they've been doing has been pretty surface level copy and paste type stuff that now you could say, ChatGPT, make me a meal plan, or what should I do for a progressive strength training program, whatever you ask, an AI app. So if that's what your quote unquote coaching has been, you should probably be shaking your boots a little bit, because everybody's about to realize, oh, I don't need to be paying however many hundreds of dollars a month for someone to do that when I can just do it in seconds myself. I've seen in Facebook groups people saying, I asked, you know, the app to meal plan for me and look how, and it's like legitimately like a pretty good, you know, dinner plan. So if that was the focus of what we did, I'd be nervous, but it's just not. I know there's already been no shortage of information out there.
Right.
Just because there's a different way to receive it now.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean it's any more useful, actually. So
You
could have gone to Google all this time and said, what should I eat for dinner? Or what's a good workout program? And if that wasn't actually helping you do it, then the issue is the same. So I think it just really, it further affirms that people need human connection and we need community support. There's a book I read, recently. It's called Together by, I think his name is Vivek Murthy. He was a former Surgeon General under Obama. Maybe still, I can't remember. But it's all about how one of his public health initiatives was loneliness and the really drastic implications of feeling isolated. And there's just incredible research on, you know, how lack of human connection is as damaging to our health as smoking, like really, really fascinating information. But, it, you know, reading that kind of on the heels of the pandemic really made me realize that the efforts that we've made to build community and to foster connection are where we need to continue going in the future. That's what's the more technology there is that can separate us from other people, the more important it becomes to be intentional about finding connection. That there's also no shortage of research on how who we surround ourselves with can really make or break our success and who we are and who we become. So we need to choose the people that we listen to and respect and spend time with really intentionally. And there's no better example of that than with your health. There's, you know, what is it, like 70% of the US is overweight or obese. So if you want to be in the minority of people who are not, the things that you do day in and day out are going to be weird. They're going to be unusual. They're going to be things that most of the people that you're around don't do or don't relate to, which means that we need to actively carve out places where it is the norm, whether that's in our local communities or online. So more and more, I mean, it's not even on my radar.
I couldn't agree more. I think it's what was that Tool song? Anyway, what is the song? Because it's the same sense. It's like we need, I think we need it because there are so many people that are doing what we do in quotes, but that are not, that it's going to really separate, like, okay, who actually gives a you know what? And then who is you know, slinging numbers and slinging, because there's a lot of apps that can do that. I think it's going to be a good thing for those of us that are actually going to the places that we need to go with our people. There's amazing technology out there now. Do you ever have skeptics? Do you ever have people that book a call with, well, I guess now with Meg, but like when you were doing the calls, it's almost like, you booked a call with me. Like, why are you like, you know, almost like aggressively like, well, why should I pay you? Cause you know, I could just do a calculator and like, I want to say, and it'd be very truthful. Like, well, why haven't you done that? Like, why aren't you successful with that? Cause I completely agree. You don't need to pay me if all you need is the numbers.
That's exactly what you say. Yeah. That's exactly what you say. So Meg does some of the calls. I still do some. And I'd say the majority of the women that we talk to have been involved in
following you. They have an idea.
They're like, they're not kind of totally coming in blind, but occasionally, we'll have, you know, our coaching is more of an investment than other options. And occasionally somebody will be like, oh, well, I worked with this company and that was only this much. And, you know, why wouldn't I just do that again? And, you know, obviously there's a way to do this professionally and politely, but I mean, it took me a while to not kind of take that stuff personally of like, oh, is what I do not worth this amount? And really get in my head about it. But at the end of the day, it's just a question. So if I can remain neutral and do exactly what you said, it's like, just get curious. Like, well, you could do that, but you're on the phone with me. So you haven't been.
Oh, so I mean, if you want to, like, let me show you some awesome training plans. And I have my, you know, I have my phone in 100-mile bike races and my next 50K. Ask me how many I'm doing. Yeah, the thing is there, but I'm not doing it. I'm sitting at my computer right now. So yeah, it's kind of a funny, but
that's something probably almost 100% of people that I talk to say some variation of, I know what to do, I'm just not doing it. Yep. And that to me is like the most useless thought of all time, because it's such a like it a dead is. End of yeah, like, no, it, it, I'm it just is not doing very... it. Like maybe I'll go like, oh, I need more motivation or I need more discipline. Any more willpower. That's not it. If you know the action items, but you're not doing them, that's what you need to figure out. Why aren't you? And it's not that you're lazy, that you're not motivated, that you're not disciplined. There's something else standing in the way.
Right.
So that's where coaching comes in. Let's figure out what that is and what all of those things are going to be, because you were talking earlier about developing tools. That's a big focus of our coaching too, because health needs to be a lifelong commitment. And our lives are far too dynamic for any couple of specific things to be the answer for forever.
Right.
What we actually need is to learn to trust ourselves and to have a mindset of, I can identify obstacles and then I can learn what I need to overcome them. So it's not that we can predict the entire rest of your life and here's exactly what you're going to need to do. It's that you've gotten yourself to the point that you know, oh, there's an issue here. Let me figure out what it is and let me figure out what to do about it. And that's where all the different tools and the skills and stuff come in.
Yeah. We are very much in alignment. The trust yourself part is huge. And I think that's where it's what Jeb and I were talking about, the external controls and the forced do it this way. I think something I try to, before they even enter the program on the consult call, I let people know what's working for you at this snapshot in time may not always be the thing. It's a fluid, it's tough to describe, but like how you attack, you know, the answer to the solution right now, or the answer to the riddle, whatever. Stop tripping over your words, Jason. What works for you now may not always work for you, but right now, this is the thing. Stay open to the fact that it may evolve. And as seasons of life change, your all the hats you wear, your responsibilities, your time demands, your stress, like, don't look for the final thing. Like, all right, I have found the secret. There isn't a secret. The secret is finding out the secret for right now. And maybe tomorrow it's a different one. But I think that is what trips a lot of people up, is like, there's not at a certain number of workouts, like, okay, that box is done for the rest of my life. Now I'm done. And caring about food and, you know, just all of the things. It's very much, they're all moving targets. And no one has ever, what most people find is the farther along you get, the more pressure you put on yourself to like, all right, well, I came this far. So now I really need to, you know, go do a figure show or go do this. It's like, tie your goals to your values. That way they are always relevant. Stop putting pressure on, you know, the outside pressure is far less than the pressure that you're probably putting on yourself. So really step back, look at where you were, where you are now. Like, let's talk about that for a sec, because that's pretty amazing. Forget about that final 5%. Like, look at everything you just did.
Absolutely.
And to your overall point, if you don't have that connection with people, it's tough to even get to that conversation. But I think that's why technology getting better and better and better is sort of irrelevant for those that do base their coaching on the quality of relationships and not the quantity of relationships.
Exactly. Exactly. I want to go back to learning to trust yourself again, because I feel like if you're listening, you might be like, okay, yeah, I definitely don't trust myself, but how? So something that I've thought a lot about is, I always think about this couple. When I was in college in Boston, I was a bartender and two of the other bartenders were dating. The guy cheated on the girl and she found out because she happened to be walking down the street behind the other girl who was telling her friend about it. And happened to hear it. Yeah. So total freak accident that she found out. Anyway, they stayed together for way too long. It was miserable. They were fighting all the time. So that's what always comes to mind when I think about trust, is like, if you were to stay in a relationship with someone who has betrayed your trust, how do you overcome that? And your self-trust is the same way. You need to first actually genuinely forgive the past. Because if you are constantly berating yourself over that thing that already happened, you're never going to move past it. You need to genuinely say, okay, the past is the past. I'm not going to dwell on that. I'm going to move forward. Then you need to actually put yourself in situations where you have the opportunity to prove yourself trustworthy. So if you're always hiding in like this comfort zone of never doing anything difficult or uncomfortable, then you're never going to prove to yourself that you've changed. So you need to set the small, reasonable goals. You need to say, I'm going to do this today. And then let yourself follow through and see.
You sound like me now. This is great.
I know, right? I'm just trying to make you feel better.
Validation.
To prove that you can. And then the last piece, I think, is that you need to give yourself time, which is probably a whole conversation in and of itself, that we're all too impatient. But you can't expect that this damaged relationship is going to change overnight. you need to give it time. You need to not just prove to yourself once that you're trustworthy, but day in and day out, over and over and over again.
Get the reps. You
get the reps, exactly. So if you're listening and that's something that you struggle with, that's how I would do it. Set some small goals and start showing up for yourself. And little by little, you'll earn that trust back.
Yeah. That was my post earlier. I told you the post I made. It was as soon as I typed it out, I said the cure for anxiety is action. Do I actually believe the cure for anxiety is action? No, it's a diagnosable mental disorder.
Well, now you're gonna have to defend that in the comments all day.
I've been diagnosed with severe anxiety, severe depression. Like, it was a long time ago. I've worked through past. Anyway, I think that's also a moving target. I made that post. I said, the cure for anxiety is action. The thought of doing the thing is probably much worse than the act of doing the thing. The more it scares you, the more you should go do it. Did I mean all, you know, and this applies to 1,000% of people 1,000% of the time? No, but it was like the general sentiment of it. But now I know better. If you want to run the marathon and you're currently sedentary, go walk a few days a week. And then go walk a little faster more times a week, and then do intervals, and then jog, and then run, and then do a 5K. You know, action doesn't have to be the whole thing. But like, in my experience, sitting around thinking of whatever the thing it was that was causing the anxiety was much worse than almost like cognitive behavioral therapy, right? Like slowly introducing small doses of that thing. And then you realize the monsters or the dragons in the closet were probably made to be much bigger because you never actually opened the closet door and hung out with them for a while.
1,000%. My husband and I were just talking about this because we're having this whole landlord issue with our move out. We've just been spinning ourselves up, talking back and forth to each other about it, speculating about what's going to happen. And we were talking earlier about how we just need to rip the Band-Aid and like say the thing we want to say and just get it out there. And then we can deal with the actual, next step, rather than, you know, speculating about how terrible it's going to be. You're right. It's always worse in our heads.
Always, always, always. And the more you think on it, the more it festers and grows and becomes even worse. It's like you tell yourself this white lie that was already kind of like silly to begin with. And then it's like the biggest white lie ever. And then you like have, you know, okay, here's where we stand, landlord. And he's like, oh, that, no big deal. And you're like, oh God, I didn't sleep at all for 3 weeks thinking of this conversation. You just dismissed it like that.
Right, right. Then it's this time thing. And you're like, oh, well, I can't get all that time back that I spent stewing over this. So I heard once, I'll butcher it, but some quote along the lines of worry is like money spent on rent before it's due or something like that.
Yeah.
That, you know, it's not actually going to change what happens, but you can't get that time back. Right. And something I've worked a lot on the last couple of years is just recognizing that I get to choose what I spend most of my energy thinking about. So if I want to spend it all on the worst case scenario, I can.
Yeah.
Like, what kind of life is that? So if I get to choose, why not either be realistic or be more optimistic? Assume the best, because that's equally plausible than things going poorly, but it's a lot more pleasant while I'm thinking about it.
And it's an interesting thought process. I've made posts about it. I've told people outright during one-on-one conversations. When people are coming off a string of, I tried the thing, I failed at the thing. I tried the thing, I failed at the thing. I tried this. They, however our call goes, they end up, you know, signing up. And it's like, they consider it their job to tell me, whoever their coach is, like, I'm probably just going to fail again. This is just going to be another wasted effort. Like, I already know how this is going to go. I shouldn't have spent the money. I say, I believe. You don't have to believe, but you can't disbelieve. Be indifferent and let me prove to you that you can do this thing. Like, if we could just be in, like, open to the chance of success rather than, like, if you're making it your mission to not be successful, you got your work cut out for you, sister. Like, you're probably not going to be successful.
Right. That will become self-fulfilling.
Yes. Yes. And again, this is where we go with a lot of our coaching. Like, look at the world that we've lived in the last, you know, 3 years now. Like, how can anyone just bound out of bed in the morning going, this is going to be a great day? Like, most people's disposition, I think, has been a little bit influenced just from the world we live in. But how can we as coaches at least try to have some of that light for people when they can no longer find it for themselves?
Yeah, we say something very similar. That's so interesting. We always talk about borrow our belief. And that's part of why I like to do the calls, because I need a feel for someone. And by the time there are people I talk to who I say, I don't think our coaching is the right fit. So if I have made an offer to someone, it's because I genuinely believe that they will be successful. They have the ability to be successful. And that self-doubt is so common. And yeah, we just say, you don't have to believe in yourself right now. But like you said, you do need to be open to the possibility. Yeah. And for now, borrow our belief, because I wouldn't offer work with
like
you.
That. I didn't think
you could. And over time, we will wear you down and we will help you see, and you will start to believe. Because, and again, that's, you know, comes back to the power of coaching and connection, that like sometimes what we need is someone in our lives who's, you know, one of their primary roles is to help us see what we're doing well. We're our own toughest critics. We are very good at pinpointing where we're falling short. But if somebody week in and week out is saying, hey, did you notice this? Or you did a great job with that. It just starts to shift that focus, that spotlight in your brain, where then you start to notice your own good stuff. And little by little, that kind of chips away. And you're like, you know what? Because I think, especially in the beginning, before you have like a tangible result, it's very easy to get in your head about it's not working, it's because of me, blah, blah, blah. But if you can borrow somebody else's belief for long enough that you do start to see the glimmers of hope and the progress coming through, then it's that much easier to take it on yourself and be like, you know what? I have done this part. So what's to say I can't do this next part? And then it just can grow and grow and grow and, you know, unstoppable.
Yeah. So like even zooming out from that, because something that as I hired coaches, because the need was there, because I didn't want to just be coaching and me becoming not very good at my job because I had too many clients. Imposter syndrome with new coaches is a very real thing, right? Like we take ourselves very seriously. And if I'm telling other people how to get healthier, I better be the model of health always. And what if there's a hidden camera somewhere? And so a lot of people will ask, you know, or a lot of like my coaches will ask like for feedback on, and then they will beat themselves up if someone didn't have absolutely spectacular results, like by whatever metric. And what I always encourage them with is, did you add value to their lives? Like, was there, for this snapshot in time, for this past 6 months, was their life better because you were in it? Like, there's a tangible value to that. Like, the person probably knows, I didn't lose X amount of pounds, my waist didn't shrink X amount, but like, damn, if I didn't have that placeholder and that conversation every single week and get those texts in between, imagine where I would be, you know? Yeah. And that's a difficult thing. I think that comes with time. And we as coaches trust ourselves more because we realize social media and the before and after pictures and all that crap, like it's important and it gets people interested, so you can help them in ways that actually matter a lot more. But like that is the stuff that makes AI and technology not really a worry for the people that even know what I'm talking about when they hear me say that.
Exactly. I think I totally lost my train of thought is what I think. Whenever I do like exit interviews with clients, or if I do a client spotlight for my podcast, I'm always so taken with the fact that when I ask, tell me about the results that you're proud of and what you've accomplished. Weight lost, inches lost, it's always at the bottom of the list. It's among the last things that they
mention. It should be.
Yeah. And those are people who come to us to lose weight. And they do, but in the course of doing it, they realize where their actual priorities were. And the number one thing most clients say is the thing they're most proud of is the mental progress, how much their mindsets have changed, how much more confident they are, how much more they believe in themselves, and knowing I might not be where I want to be yet, but I know I can get there. I'm like, how cool is that?
No, I mean, 1000%. When your operating mode has you like in a repeating pattern where even if today is not the day where you're there, which good luck defining where there is, because most of us are still trying. But like, if you can lay out a calendar and say like, a month from now, I'll be here. 2 months from now, 3 months from now, like that is so much more important than what scale tells you tomorrow. Like, you know, if this is just your new way of life, imagine 10 years, imagine, hey, now you're actually going to be around for your grandkids. Like now, that's the stuff that's very difficult in a very transactional relationship to really get to those points. Before I forget, because you mentioned that book together, what was the, was it Victor Murphy? I wrote down Murphy.
I believe it's Vivek, V-I-V-E-K.
V-I-V-E-K. You've read Tribe by Sebastian Younger.
I have not.
Oh, please add it to your list. I need to just, if Sam's Club could start carrying a pallet of that book and give me a massive discount, I'd really appreciate it. Like everyone that I care about, I would send that book. So I'd be sending a lot of those out. Absolutely phenomenal. If you enjoyed, like I've not read Together. It is now going to be on my immediate list. I think I've tried on Audible, not on my bookshelf. Sebastian Younger, the war correspondent, he did Coringall and Restrepo that are both on Netflix, but he was, you know, Pulitzer Prize winning journalist during a lot of the conflicts in the Middle East. It's written about PTSD. From one standpoint, soldiers returning home and why they go through what they go through. And then even more of the book is written about us, like just the rest of society and why we feel so many of the things we feel and how social isolation is just a huge, huge part of it. I think that it's cool that it's even being brought up by other people. I feel like I'm the only one that ever thinks of it or talks about it. So for you to bring up that book and speak about it, I think we're still, COVID is too recent. We still don't know exactly what it did to us. I think future textbooks and generations are going to look back, and it's why a lot of us are working through things in certain ways. I think heading into it, we were already damaged. And then that, at least in the US, I don't know how it was in Germany, but a lot of how we lived through things here, we were already feeling very isolated. And then to the truest extent of the definition, we were super isolated. And so his book is all about that. And the importance of social connection and tribe, and that's why it's called Tribe. But he talks about through history, times of natural disaster, if you look at most mental health statistics, they were actually improved because times of disaster brought cultures and tribes closer together. Like look at 9/11, look at Red Sox fans wearing a Yankees hat and vice versa. Look at during the Blitzkrieg in London, World War II, London citizens were largely living in bomb shelters underneath the city. And like in my mind, before I read that and went back and like read things, I you know, the Blitzkrieg, 2 or 3 days, and wow, that was crazy. And now like, let's clean up the road. It was weeks on end. And so they would like literally spend the nights in these bomb shelters under the city, but then they would go to work because it was just this dragging on event. But they felt so close and so united because all they had was each other, and literally hell raining down on them, but they had each other. And it was, I read it in 2018 or 2019 and started posting and getting very outspoken about it. And then COVID happened and I was like, oh my God. So you take this thing that should have brought us all closer together, but then you add in social media, you add in everyone's opinions on masks or not masks, vaccinations or not vaccinations, add in a very divisive political climate. And it was just hell. It was just absolute hell for everyone. Interesting stuff to, I have no key takeaways there. The book is amazing. Everyone should read it.
I have on my calendar, I have to cancel my German Amazon on Monday, which means I will order it right now and have it probably tomorrow.
It's, I love the way he writes. He has another one. I think it's called Over There. Anyway, that fancy tonal on the wall behind me.
Is that what that is?
It is. It's a tonal. It's great.
I was going to ask because I can occasionally see traffic going by.
You can see
by.
The garbage truck driving by. Is it a window? Yeah, no, that's a tonal. It's amazing. It's 10 feet behind me. I'm at my computer desk right now. This is where I am most of the day. When it's time to work out, doing a 180 and walking 10 feet that way and working out, it feels very, it's like I am legend. I feel like the guy in there, like I'm the only one in the world and this is my room. And there's a lot of things that can enhance and become tools in the toolbox. That is a tool in the toolbox. When I was going through all my rehab after surgery, it really helped me. But now I'm back in the gym. Ask me how many times I've used that fancy wall art in the last few months. People need to be around people, and coaches that are good coaches will be able to demonstrate that within their coaching, and they'll always have clients. And I think you will always fall into that group because that's who you are as a coach. In an hour and 14 minutes, I can confidently say that at this point. I always intend on having a way to wrap everything in, and I usually don't. So maybe you have some Give us some of this 10 key takeaways here.
I'm just going to ramble, and then be like, see you next week.
No, this was absolutely...
I'm glad you touched on the tonal, though, because I've been trying to figure out what the attachments behind you are. And I was like, does he have his barbecue tools hanging?
Propane and propane accessories. Yeah, no, it's all the attachments.
Very cool.
The AI, absolutely amazing. It remembers your last workout. You never fiddle with weights. It does everything for you. The app sends you amazing technology. Will personal trainers ever not exist? Absolutely not. Will gyms ever close? Absolutely not. You can't replace human connection.
Yep.
So if you're not doing it, you can absolutely be out of a job. But that's the thing that's going to differentiate trainers and coaches from apps. So if you're not leaning into that side of it, you should probably start.
there's our ending right there. And out.
Not that we've got it all figured out, but I think it's just, you've read How to Win Friends and Influence People, Dale Carnegie. Like the very opening, I always butcher the percentages. It was like the MIT, was it Harvard and MIT? The joint study done between the two very prestigious. One's earning potential over their lifetime is something like 80% their ability to communicate and 20% their actual job knowledge. So you can be like really, really, really inept at your job, like horrible at your job. But if you can communicate well, you'll probably do very, very well. I wish more people would read that book, and especially that statistic. And if you're not good at communicating, find ways to slowly. I'm not a good public speaker. I can talk one-on-one.
Two more Toastmasters, you will be.
Yeah, oh God. I can talk one-on-one all day. You know what I'm doing? For real? So I started working at F45. I've been going at 6 a.m. I've gotten to know the two owners there really, really well. They desperately need coaches. I would really love more social connection, and I love the early class. So I'm going to start coaching there. I'm going to get better at public speaking because I'm going to have to. It's like Monday, I'm going to like shadow. I'm super uncomfortable and like sketched out by and anxious. So I know that that's exactly where I need to be on Monday morning. And I'm going to become a public speaker, whether I like it or not. So I'm in this season of just saying yes to everything. Like I'm very aware of boundaries, and I've read all the books, and I know I can't say yes to literally everything. But usually what I'm trying to do right now is say yes to the things that scare me, because that's where I need to grow. Yeah.
I love that. There's another book. So we're in a remote duty station. So the military sends like boxes of random books to the handful of us up here. We've never actually received a shipment of them. It's a long story, it doesn't matter. But we happened upon these like four boxes of books. One of them is called Tools by Phil Stutz, S-T-U-T-Z, and Barry, dude. Somebody.
You've seen his documentary
with,
right?
Jonah Hill. Yes. Yeah. That guy.
I've got the book. Yeah.
Oh, do you? Okay. So I got through like the first tool, and that's exactly it. It's like run towards the pain, run towards the discomfort of whatever it is that you're avoiding or you don't want to do. Well, that's what you need the most. And I think that attitude and that outlook, like that's how you grow as a person. It's the only way you're ever going to not be scared of those things is to do them. I remember when I got the job at the group fitness, it was like a boutique studio in La Jolla when I was living in San Diego, and I had to do a live audition like with a real class, and I knew that the owner was there watching. I was so incredibly nervous, and I ended up getting the job, but you know, the owner pulled me aside and he was like, I could see the difference when you knew I was there, and when you didn't think I was there, you were so much less anxious. And if not for being in that really high pressure or felt high pressure situation, I never would have gotten comfortable in front of a group. I never would have been able to sub when I was a fitness manager and jump into a group of 20. And I feel like certainly if I were like standing on a stage, that's something I would need to work on. But even just being on live video, like all this stuff is scary till you do it and you're awkward and not very good at it. And then you realize, well, I was awkward, not very good, and like kind of embarrassed myself, but I survived. And you just keep doing it. And eventually you're less embarrassing.
Everything, anyone that's good at anything was once pretty horrible at the thing.
They just did it enough times that they stopped being
horrible. Yeah. The people that you see that are great at anything are the ones that didn't quit. That's literally it. Like most people do not have, you know, this extreme talent for this thing. It's maybe a little bit of genetics, a crap load of hard work, a crap load of time, a crap load of times going in when they had every reason to talk themselves out of it, and they've just not quit. Look at you, 2012, starting online, shouting into the abyss. I still feel like I'm shouting into the abyss. The really crappy dog meme where he's like in space, floating through the space chamber, saying, "I have no idea what I'm doing." Like, that's me most days. Facebook turned my page into a creator page, and now no one sees like anything I post. I'm like, all right, cool. I don't know what I'm doing, but you figure it out and you just don't quit. And eventually, hopefully, you just stay not quitting and you get somewhere good. And for most of us, I like to think we just didn't quit. For you and I both, I think that applies. Is there anything else you wanted to get in? Because I keep cutting you off.
No, this has been good.
This is awesome.
No, I think I'm proud of us for actually talking about the topic we said we're going to talk about, because I feel
we like nailed it. Might be a first for me. Progress, not perfection. Really was. We are extremely like-minded. It really does blow my mind how we never cross paths when you were here.
I know, right? Then.
Have you told me? Or are you allowed to? Like, where is the move?
We're going to San Diego. We're Coronado.
I'm so sorry. That sounds terrible.
I know, right?
I know you wish we were in Norfolk.
We were in our early 20s in living in Pacific Beach. And now we're coming back 12 years later with a human we created and coming full circle. It's crazy. But yeah,
that's incredible. And how long is that? How long is that tour for?
It'll basically be for as much of his career as he wants to be there. There are plenty of jobs there. So
good for you guys.
We've done so much traveling, or, you know, so many different duty stations up until this point, that I feel like we're both kind of looking forward to being settled for a while. My son's going to kindergarten, and we want him to, you know, play sports and stuff like that. So there's a chance we'll be there till he retires. But we also haven't been in the US for a few years. So yeah. We might get a taste of it and be like, send us back to Europe ASAP. So we'll see.
Well, I think San Diego is like an anomaly, though. Anyone that I've ever met that's ever been to San Diego immediately wants to move to San Diego upon returning home.
That's what they're vacation. I was working at Boston Sports Club after college. I had gotten promoted to the fitness manager of one of the biggest clubs. I was making really good money. I was in my early 20s. And I just wasn't happy. And I was like, I know that if I stay here long enough, it's going to get harder and harder to leave. I'm going to meet some guy. I'm going to end up settling down. I'm going to be working at this job for the rest of my life. And I went out to San Diego with a friend who worked at the gym. Her dad lived out there. And we went out for spring break. I literally came back, quit my job, sold my stuff, was living there, 2 months later?
Wow. That is a place that it's like that. And like, we love to ski. I love to mountain bike, like mountainy outdoor. There's certain areas where I'm like, I can't vacation there. Like, I already want to move everywhere that I vacation to, even if, like, I don't know what's wrong with my brain. Some of the areas aren't even awesome, but like San Diego, the only good thing about it, and the reason that I know it's not possible, you know, Spencer, right? Like Dr. Nadolski.
Yeah. Yeah.
We were friends. He was actually like my doctor when he did, Steady MD, but we've been friends for a while. And when they were in San Diego, he, you know, private practice or concierge, whatever the heck, he does a lot of different things, and his company's constantly evolving. But his wife, I believe Navy, but she was a physician within the military, pretty sure Navy. So they're both doctors in San Diego. And we were like just talking back and forth about all things San Diego. And he's like, dude, we're both doctors and we can't afford to live here. He's like, I don't know who can afford to live here.
Situation.
Yeah. He's like, we have a tiny apartment. Like, it's cool because we can walk everywhere. But like, if our two salaries and BAH and everything still make it, like, really going to make some lifestyle adjustments. He's like, I don't know who affords to live here. But if two doctors with a, you know, a baby, it struggle, like, good luck. I'm like, all right, I can probably cross San Diego off the old wish list. Anyway, all right.
Okay, it's been fun.
That was super awesome. Stay in touch. This was like seriously super, super cool. Esther, how do people find you? Read you actively still write on your blog, right? I see your stuff all the time. You're an incredible writer, probably also because
you didn't quit writing.
Yeah, you just didn't quit.
I haven't blogged in a long time because I have the podcast now, and it's much easier for me to just speak stream of consciousness than to try to perfect a blog, but I'm writing a book this year. So that's where all of my writing energy is going. My podcast is called Live Diet Free. It's on all the podcast places. It's a little over 2 years old. I love it. It's fun. I'd appreciate if you left a rating and a review. Thanks. and then I'm on Facebook and Instagram, Esther.Avant on Instagram, my full name on Facebook, and that's my website as well.
Cool. And we'll put your contact info in the show notes so everyone can find you. I love good people, and I like, you know, we all have our own platforms, and it's a big industry, and then there's like good people within a big industry, and there's no scarcity, to your point, 70% plus need someone. We're the frontline healthcare workers. People see their doctors 15 minutes a year. They do work with their coach a heck of a lot more than that. We're all fighting the same battle for everyone. Thank you, Esther. I guess we're done recording. I should probably hit stop, huh?
Thank you for having me.
All right. Thank you, everyone. Tune in again.
All right, so that's a wrap. Thank you so much for listening to Fed Up from Falcon Nutrition. We hope you learned a thing or two, or at worst, had a little fun with us. Please make sure you subscribe to stay up to date with our most recent episodes, and make sure you hit us up if we can answer any questions for you. Talk to you next time.